And welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Yes, indeed. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Our number for today's broadcast, of course, as always, 806-745-5800 if you have a question along the way. We do have a special guest on the show with us today, Dr. Nasha Winters.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Nasha Winters here on the show. Going to talk about some cancer situations and what we can do about it. But let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, also health coach Melody Wilkes with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Wade.
Great round table discussion about your health with You're the Cure right here on AM 580. And so tell us a little bit about our guest today on the show, Dr. Edwards.
Well, let me preface this a little bit. It seems like I preface the same thing every show, that a lot of what we talk about on this show is a little bit polar opposite of what we've heard in mainstream medicine, conventional medicine, or on the nightly news. You know, whether it's burn more out than you put in to lose weight, how that's wrong, or eat low fat, we tell you to eat high fat on this show, or, you know, the cholesterol is not the enemy, bypass surgeries don't reduce heart attack, you know, risk of future heart attacks, they just relieve chest pain. So a lot of what you hear is kind of eyebrow raising on this show, because it's just different than the conventional medicine. But we also remind you that we need something different than the conventional answer, because what the conventional answer has got us over the last 50 years is pre-World War II, we were one of the healthiest people groups in the world, Americans were, and it's been downhill ever since. The past 50, 60, 70 years, we've become the sickest industrialized country in the world. We have the worst health outcomes. We die younger than anyone else. Even our babies die more often. Infant mortality is number one in the industrialized world. Chronic disease is number one. And we hear these, I think everyone's become numb to all these statistics on these increasing rates of diabetes and Alzheimer's and obesity and cancer and you name it. Our outcomes are just poor. And although we're spending the most money, going to the doctor the most, doing the most procedures, we get the worst outcomes. I tell people all the time, if we were a Fortune 500 company or a professional sports team, we'd be fired. I mean, the board of directors would be replaced, the head coach would be replaced, because our outcomes are so bad, although we're spending so much money. And when it comes to cancer, we haven't really budged survival rates in the last 50 years since we've poured billions of dollars into that research. So today's an exciting show. I think it's going to be one of the best shows of the year, really. I'm really excited to have Dr. Winters join us today because of the information she's going to bring. We at Veritas, we often talk about the terrain, and we try to shift people's thoughts off the germ theory and onto the terrain theory. And it's all about focusing on that terrain. The body's got the cure. That's why the show's named You're the Cure. Your body has the cure, but you've got to steward it right. You've got to give it all it needs and avoid what it doesn't. And that's what Dr. Winters preaches also. So Dr. Nasha Winters, she is the founder, CEO, and visionary of Optimal Terrain Consulting, with that same website, optimalterrainconsulting.com. She is a nationally board-certified naturopathic doctor, which I love naturopathic doctors. State of Texas doesn't recognize naturopaths, unfortunately. I, in fact, had a pre-med student, was accepted to Texas Tech Medical School here in Lubbock, and she came to shadow at our clinic. After shadowing at 10 other conventional clinics, she came to ours, and within a few days, she decided to tear up that acceptance letter to Texas Tech Medical School and apply to Bastyr University, and she got accepted, and she's now a naturopathic medical school. So these are real medical schools and real doctors. They just have a different mindset. And I wish I actually, looking back, I wish I had gone to a naturopathic medical school. Maybe someday I'll go back. But anyways, let's continue. She's also, Dr. Winters is a licensed acupuncturist and a fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Oncology. She lectures all over the world, training physicians in the application of mistletoe therapy and consulting with researchers on projects involving immune modulation via mistletoe, hyperthermia, and the ketogenic diet, which we've talked about on this show many a time. She lives in Durango, Colorado. Her new book, which I highly recommend for everybody, not just cancer patients, although one out of two Americans are going to have cancer in our lifetime. So, Wade, I'm looking at you and Melody. One out of two, who's it going to be here? So, listeners, look at the person.
It might be me.
No, don't even say that. No. Hey, Dr. Edwards, there's three of us sitting at this table.
Well, and we've got three kids behind us, so eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
No.
I'm sorry, I digress. But the point was, everyone needs to get this book before you get cancer. But seriously, I've read the book. I love it. It's about cancer, but it's really about stewarding your health in all chronic disease. If you follow what Dr. Winters points out in her book here, and it lays out very beautifully in the book, you should live a long, healthy, productive life and not have to worry about doctors, which is our goal at Veritas, is to not need a doctor. So her new book, which I just have been talking about, is called The Metabolic Approach to Cancer. Co-authored also by Jesse Higgins Kelly. It's published by Chelsea Green Publishing and is now available. I think it's been out a month or so. Wherever books are sold, you can pick one up, or Dr. Winter's website, I'm sure you could get it too. Or chelseagreen.com, I bet, the publisher. So that was kind of a long intro, and I didn't want to waste that much time because we got so much good information to talk about today. Dr. Winters, thank you so much for joining us. We're really excited to have you on the show.
Wow, what a great start. I love you guys. I wish I was there around the table with you right now.
We do too.
Well, anytime you're passing through Lubbock, Texas, for whatever reason that would be, I don't know why you would, from Durango, come to Lubbock. But if you ever do, please stop by. We'd love to see you and chat
Thank
live. But we love
you.
I love Durango. My wife's from Colorado, Creed, Colorado.
Okay.
So.
Oh, gosh, we were just there last weekend. So
awesome.
What a beautiful little town.
Yes,
great.
It is.
Oh, nice.
Well, I want to dive right in. I've got a lot of questions in mind to ask you, but I want the listeners to have a backdrop here to frame this discussion from your personal story. Could you start there, Dr. Winters, with going through your personal story a little bit, as much depth as you want to, background, then we'll get into your thoughts on cancer and the new book and all that.
Great. Well, thank you again for having me. And, you know, I think all of us come, you know, at least in the healthcare field, many of us show up where we are because of our own experiences or the experiences of those that we are closest to. So I'm no different than, you know, the rest of us in the healthcare field. We always talk about the wounded healer and the healer heal thyself concept. I basically kind of popped out into this world a day late and a dollar short. With my health, I had a lot of chronic illness, patterns, digestive issues from the get-go. I was from the generation where they weren't breastfeeding, and yet I was allergic to all of the formulas, and so was just kind of chronically sick and looked like a little bloat belly from the get-go. That led into many years of chronic digestive issues, chronic sleep issues, and when hormones kicked in, chronic hormonal imbalances, diagnosis of endometriosis, which are, we now understand as an autoimmune condition, which makes sense if I had some broken down GI issues from the get-go. And that just sort of rolled into deeper and deeper, you know, down the continuum into more and more progressive and chronic illness. By the time I was 14, I'd had a bout of cervical dysplasia, 16, cervical cancer, 19, after a year of a lot of misdiagnosis, because of my age and because of, you know, we can look at ourselves sometimes and think, you're fine, but we don't often know what's going on under the hood. And so apparently what was going on under the hood was a very aggressive, progressive terminal illness that until I was basically engulfed in flames, and it was too obvious for everybody and frankly too late for a conventional intervention. I was 19 years old and given just a matter of months to live. And, you know, having the ER doc crying as he's telling me this because he had a daughter my age, I pretty much spent that afternoon consoling him versus the other way around. But thankfully, that experience launched me into going right to the library. And the first book that literally jumped off the shelf at me was a book by that time not very well known back in 1991, Dr. Deepak Chopra's book, Quantum Healing. So, you know, from a girl from Kansas, moving to Colorado for college, super sick, far away from all my family and resources, that book became an incredible life raft for me and changed the trajectory of me going into conventional medicine because I was pre-med and really hoping to go to conventional medical school. And it redirected my major into a self-constructed major, which again was a time where no one knew of this concept, but I basically created a self-constructed major of biology and psychology to study what we now know as psychoneuroimmunology, because I knew that there was a fair share of trauma that had related to why I had been so sick for so long and why it had become so aggressive at such a young age, on top of diet and lifestyle and socioeconomic stressors, etc. So, you know, I somehow knew at a young age that there was a lot more at play than just bad luck or genetics. I had some intuition that this was far greater than what we were led to believe. And that has, of course, informed the last 25 and a half, almost 26 years of my journey into understanding the terrain and all that it takes to help us get well and all that it takes to help us get unwell. And that's where I put my focus today.
Well, that's an amazing story. So you had a terminal diagnosis at age 19, you said?
Yes. And actually, my actual diagnosis came just shy of a month after my 20th birthday, but I had been in and out of the emergency room almost, I mean, for a long time, every few months, and then the last couple months I was there weekly, and no one could figure it out until basically I was bloated like a nine-month pregnant person with ascites and extreme cachexia and my electrolytes completely off balance and my liver completely in shutdown mode as well as my kidneys. And so by then I was basically on my way out, and because of my organ function, that's why it was not advised for me to jump into any conventional therapies.
Right.
So their idea was palliation only, and hospice.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And the diagnosis, was that cervical or ovarian?
At that time it was ovarian.
Okay.
Again, caught us all off guard. And this is, my gosh, 91 is when I was diagnosed, and it wasn't until 96 that we started talking about BRCA and testing. I was one of the first people tested for that gene and came back positive. And so it helped, you know, understand some of the epigenetic underpinnings, but I certainly knew that it wasn't the only trigger.
Right. So stage 4 ovarian at 20 years old? Okay, stage 4 ovarian, palliative care only, go to hospice and maybe 3 months to live, basically, is what you were faced with. And for the listeners, that BRCA, BRCA gene, we've talked about some, and we talk about how these genes can be in us. However, it's the epigenetics above the genes, all the factors that influence whether a gene will be turned on or turned off. And we have control over that. And 95% of all cancer is an epigenetically derived cancer. It's the diet and lifestyle that turn the genes on or keep them turned off. And so Dr. Winters, 25 years ago, stage 4 cancer, go home to die on hospice, nothing much to do. And now she's here 25 years later talking on the radio. And I would say ovarian cancer... to me, in my old practice at Garza County Health Clinic, if I had a patient, pancreatic, ovarian, or glioblastoma, those are like the top three where I would just kind of say, I'm sorry, but there's really nothing, no hope, and, you know, get your affairs in order. Of course, that was with my training in conventional medicine, where chemo, radiation, and surgery, the three cancer options available in the state of Texas. When you just have those three options available, the outcomes are very poor with those particular cancers, and really with all cancers. Mm-hmm. But what we're going to talk about are some things that can complement that, and some people, in fact, choose not to, they just forgo conventional therapy and just do the integrative or complementary approach. So that's an amazing story. Just that right there is incredible. So tell us how you moved from there to get where you are today and to make the decision to write a book.
Well, I think that part of that was, you know, for me, it was the ultimate wake-up call of really dealing with some of the debris and ghosts in my own proverbial closet, and, you know, making some big changes in the relationships in my life, in the overworking. I was that go-getter, working, you know, 2-3 jobs, taking a huge pre-med load of, you know, biology, chemistry courses of over 22 credit hours, you know, working grave shift, which of course we now know, at a detox center. I mean, that was kind of my life. I was a survival mode kind of gal from where I come from. And I needed to really, you know, of course my friends today would say I still look like that, but compared to how I lived my life then, it's I look like I'm on vacation now. But, you know, so I learned all these things and I made major shifts. I was definitely living on the standard American diet and a latchkey kid standard American diet, all processed foods. Especially in college, I was the ramen poster child. So I don't know if I actually ate a fresh vegetable in the first year I was in med school or in undergrad because of just finances and ease and you know, just where we were at that time. And that's right. Kind of a teenage lifestyle. And so I made probably one of the biggest adjustments in my diet. I actually initiated a completely vegan diet. And what we, that was all, of course, we knew back then. We knew about Gerson. We knew about raw food veganism. And I think for me, it was like jumping into a higher tiered nutritional place. I started eating whole grains. I started eating fresh food. I started eating fresh fruits and vegetables, which were just unheard of. So for me, it was a very positive shift initially. It became very clear within a couple of years that that was not enough for me and that I was actually kind of reversing and going back into a more cancering process, thanks to what we've learned today about the amount of sugar that that diet entails, and also that I was pretty much a carb junkie and taking in a lot of lectins that, given my underpinnings of autoimmunity, which once the epigenetic testing became available and other testing, I later learned that I had the genes for rheumatoid arthritis, I'd had symptomatic RA, I had PCOS, I had endometriosis, I had Hashimoto's, I had celiac or have celiac, you know, so it was like a walking poster child. So all those grains and lectins from a lot of those foods I was eating was just aggravating my overall terrain, making it more challenging for me to fight off any disease process or chronic infections, you name it. And so I learned, like I was a living, breathing laboratory, and so I would alter my trajectory and alter my approach to myself as, frankly, I learned more and as the studies and the science caught up with me. So a lot of things I tried were very accidental, and I accidentally chose some really good things, but I also learned along the way what worked and didn't work, and I would make changes accordingly. And as I got into naturopathic school, I was able to test my labs quite frequently. And so I was able to really watch in real time, pretty much running labs at least every 3 months, as often as every month, to see how any new therapy, any new herbal regimen, any new supplemental regimen, any new dietary regimen, or even mind-body regimen impacted my internal physiology. And then I began applying that in clinical studies when I was in med school to my patients and, you know, saw miracles happening. And so those were kind of my early training wheel days of learning. And by the time I stepped into private practice, I had a lot of understanding of what really works and what doesn't work. And I wasn't taking things for face value. And Dr. Edwards, you recognize, like, at that time, there was also no such thing as Dr. Google.
Right.
So I was, you know, I was the Dewey Decimal patient. You know, I was out there studying everything I could of what was written in the literature. And much of the things I found to help, inform my medical decisions were coming from writings as early as, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s. Because basically everything in a textbook written, you know, after the 1950s, we haven't moved very far since then.
Right.
And some of the most compelling findings, like from people like Eli Jones, a well-known oncologist in the 1920s, or even Lindlar and some of the nature cure doctors of the 1800s and early 1900s, talked about things, that, or even Beauchamp, you know, at the same time that Louis Pasteur came into fame, so the terrain-centric sciences, that all, you know, it's like we were really on to something. Otto Warburg, all of these guys, we were on to something until World War II, when we decided to reinvest our money into what to do with all that leftover ammo, which we thought, let's put that into agriculture and let's put that into pharmaceuticals. And then, of course, the invention or the understanding of the DNA, so Watson and Crick, it just took us on a very different path. And so that health-based, metabolic-based, terrain-based model got buried and suppressed for a very long time. There were a couple people out there trying to keep it alive, but it really lost favor.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. So I want to kind of summarize for the listeners what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
As we, you know, I think the regular American, when they think about cancer, they're so focused on the tumor. not only the regular American, but your conventional oncologist. I call them tumor killers now because they're so focused on that tumor. Let's kill the tumor, shrink the tumor, cut the tumor, burn the tumor, poison the tumor. It's all about the tumor. But what we know now, it's that doesn't really work. I think some researchers in Australia a few years ago published a study. They looked at American cancer rates and outcomes and said 2.3 or 2.1% of Americans benefit from chemotherapy. There was a study just a week or two ago that said chemotherapy given to breast cancer patients prior to their lumpectomy actually made the cancer worse and made it spread more. We know that chemo actually makes the cancer stem cells hardier and more resistant. Now, notice I said stem cell there, listeners. The tumor cells grow and make tumors, but it's the cancer stem cells that shed off and float around in the body and find another place to settle down, and that's where your metastasis comes from, and that's what ends up killing you, is when the cancer spreads everywhere. So doing things that cause the cancer to spread more aggressively and be more resistant to therapy, that's the wrong way to go, but that's exactly what chemotherapy does. So this focus on just tumor, over the last 50 years, we see the outcomes, they're poor. So what Dr. Winters is talking about is pre-World War II, we were onto something as far as looking at the terrain, looking at the environment. Why did the tumor end up being able to establish there? Just like, why are all the cockroaches in your kitchen? It's because you never took out the garbage. So you can focus on crunching cockroaches all day, but they're going to keep coming back every night because the garbage wasn't taken out. It's that simple. It's just like the algae in the fish tank, I tell patients. You can scrub that green algae every single morning, but the next day it's going to be there until you get your pH and your oxygen content and the temperature and the internal terrain right, then the algae will take care of itself. The cockroaches will go away all by themselves when you get the garbage out. So that's what Dr. Winters is talking about. Pre-World War II, Otto Warburg, he had this theory that, or he noticed an observation that he made was that cancer seems to be growing when there's no oxygen. And oxygen-deprived areas and tissues is when cancer grows. And there's these others that Dr. Winters was talking about that were really looking at more of the body as a whole and the terrain and what's different about the body and these cells that's allowing this tumor to come, as opposed to just thinking, well, I just have bad genes. There's nothing I can do about it. I was going to have cancer no matter what because my genes told me I was. And that's totally wrong. Totally, totally wrong. And the science proves that now. We understand that now, that it's much more about the terrain, the environment. So that's really what Dr. Winters is talking about here. I think we're close enough to needing a break, Dr. Winters. We've set the stage really well. The meat of your book, The Terrain 10, you've labeled it, and that's what I want to get into when we get back from the break, is actually diving into some of the details of what this terrain is. You've already mentioned the diet and even the stressors, and I love that. Those are the two things we focus on so much at Veritas. Yeah. We have four pillars, and those are the two biggest ones, I would say. Putting the right ingredients in as far as our fuel, and then being at peace as opposed to fight or flight mode. And I love how you started out saying when you were 16, 17, 18, 19, you were in this major fight or flight mode. That's huge. Yeah. Everybody wants to go straight to the diet. And obviously that's important. But this lifestyle that, this blanket term we call lifestyle means all these daily fight or flight inducing things that we put ourselves through every day. So that you've touched on that, but we'll dive deeper into the terrain and the terrain 10 that you describe in your book and the ketogenic diet even. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Special guest, Dr. Nasha Winters here on the show. Yes. Let's get right back into it, of course. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You can catch up on older shows there. We have the recordings up at veritasmedical.com. So if you'd like to listen to them, you can certainly check it out, veritasmedical.com.
And Dr. Nasha Winters' website, optimalterrainconsulting.com, and her new book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer. So let's dive right back in. I can't help but kind of chuckle. Listen, Dr. Winters talked about how she was the latchkey kid of the 80s and grew up under that processed food thing. We had Jimmy Moore on last week. He was talking about the same thing, Doritos and Pop-Tarts and Coca-Cola. And I'm thinking, man, I must be getting a little old because that 1980s that we're talking about, that's me too. That's what I grew up under. All that sounded familiar. I was like, are we already like an older generation now where you can look back and talk about those things historically? But it is. So let's maybe Well, you can start wherever you want. I was going to go to that ketogenic diet first because you've mentioned standard American processed food. Then you went into vegan, but that had some limitations for you. You actually started going backwards after a couple of years. And I still have cancer. Patients with the diagnosis of cancer will come see us to get supportive care, nutritional consulting, stuff like that. And still, even today, oncologists and regular doctors are saying, oh, it doesn't matter what you eat. Just eat whatever. Eat some ice cream to keep your weight up, or drink Boost or Ensure, which is nothing but sugar. And, right. You know, M&Ms are in the glass bowl at the oncology secretary check-in station. And it's just craziness when there's so much data, and it's been around for so long, that these cancer cells thrive off sugar. So maybe start there, and then we'll go into the other terrain, parts of the terrain.
Perfect. Well, you know, it comes down very simply to the fuel we put in our body and how that fuel translates into all the cells and tissues and organs of our body. And so, you know, just like you can't drive a car with bad gas, you might be able to go a few blocks down, sputtering a little bit, but you end up stalling. That's ultimately what's happening in our bodies over the last few years. And, of course, those latchkey 80s years were not helping the matters at all. And so what, you know, in simple terms, the mitochondria are sort of the center of this. And for those of you not familiar, the mitochondria are the little power generators within each of our cells. And they make something called ATP, but for simplistic terms, they are the things that make us create more energy and move along efficiently and effectively. Or if they're sluggish or lacking in number or lacking in quality, we also, you know, we're kind of a reflection of the function of our mitochondria. And so the ketogenic diet, when we first started really utilizing it in a cancer environment, we were using it initially thinking, gosh, this is going to be great to lower the fuel, the main fuel source for cancer cells. And we were thinking rather simplistically that it was only about lowering sugar. And we have, of course, does it do that? Yes, it does. But it also does a lot of other things, which is what we dive into in the Terrain 10 within our book. So, for instance, we're spending billions of dollars right now on drugs that are considered targeted therapies for cancer, such as checkpoint inhibitors, like things like Keytruda and Opdivo. And, you know, they have, they're showing some positive, like everyone heard about Jimmy Carter and got excited, but ultimately the most people who are having access to these drugs are already too far down the rabbit hole. They're offering them up too late when the mitochondria are already kind of offline and not working well. And so we're finding that things like just the ketogenic diet itself is a natural checkpoint inhibitor. It acts like those drugs without the side effects, and it doesn't matter if the immune system is working well or not, because another side effect of the ketogenic diet is that it immunomodulates. It increases certain cytokines that are anti-inflammatory and anti-cancer. It lowers certain cytokines, these little chemicals that are also pro-inflammatory and pro-cancering in nature. It induces tumor, like apoptosis, the die-off of cancer cells. It does something called HDAC inhibition, which is very specific to our epigenetic expression and how we methylate. And it's strongly anti-inflammatory and really slows tumor proliferation down in its tracks. So it doesn't just have one mechanism. And so many of the drugs we use today are focusing a single treatment on a single target. And yet the 6 to 10 typical targets we want to get after in cancer can be reached with one therapy, this ketogenic diet, and it does so in such a powerful way that we think it's directly impacting the quality of life of that mitochondria, which is, of course, going to impact ours.
Well, that, listeners, I hope you can wrap your head around that. That was amazing. I mean, that was like 10 drug effects in one diet that's actually all beneficial, no side effect, no bad side effects. That's fascinating. Well, talk more about the mitochondria, the energy factory of the cell, and what happens, you know, when that mitochondria is damaged, dysfunctional, there's not enough of them or whatever, in terms of the actual root cause of cancer. People ask all the time, what's actually causing cancer? And now it's becoming more and more clear. The money's at the mitochondria. That's where all the that's where everything's coming out. I read a study or someone told me about a study, maybe you can comment on this. They took a cancer cell and they took the nucleus out of that cancer cell, the DNA out of that cancer cell, and put it, transferred it into a healthy cell, and that healthy cell stayed healthy. When you just transfer the genes over, it stayed healthy, did not bring cancer with it. But then they took the mitochondria out of the cancer cell, put it over into a healthy cell, and it turned that healthy cell into a cancerous cell. So it became very, very clear and just reinforced what we're talking about here, that it's not the genes. It's these other factors, and these other factors of diet and lifestyle actually have their influence at the mitochondria. And then the mitochondria get dysfunctional, and what happens from there, Dr. Winters, with the mitochondria?
I love that you brought that up, because actually your listeners might enjoy watching a very short TED Talk, 15 minutes or so, of Dr. Mina Bissell, like the vacuum cleaner. She's been a well-known oncology researcher for well over 30 years, and she does an entire talk on this. I think it was back in like 2009, it was several years back, and she does a great talk about this concept of exactly what you described, this sort of transplantation of healthy mitochondria into cancer cells that turn them back into healthy cells, and vice versa of the poor functioning, sad, broken down mitochondria, the cancer cells put into healthy cells, and then those turn into cancer cells. I actually have a little diagram that I show at slideshows that has kind of the happy phase and the sad phase of the mitochondria, and how you can turn on or off cancer simply by the health and vitality of the mitochondria. She was definitely seeing that research for a very long time. And then that was what led to the groundbreaking book that came out in 2011 by Dr. Thomas Seyfried, who was a researcher at Boston University, who did exactly those studies and saw exactly that information that is now, you know, kind of turned the world of conventional oncology on its head. I mean, he was terribly ridiculed, still is in some camps, but my gosh, it's really driving the conversation to a different direction and kind of back to where we hope to have been at the turn, you know, after World War II. So we are finally getting more studies, more thoughts around this, and we're also starting to pay attention to what makes those mitochondria sick, okay? And that's what, you know, again, when I started this journey for myself 25 years ago, I knew about the mitochondria because I was a scientist and a biology major and whatnot, but I didn't understand its implications into my life. Even when I was in naturopathic medical school, we talked about, for instance, the Krebs cycle and the malic acid, aspects of that Krebs cycle, that if people had fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, they had insufficient mitochondrial function. And so basically, poor energy reserves and poor ability to get the toxins out. So it just kind of built up like garbage accumulating along the sidewalks of the body, which led to those symptoms of fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. So we started to talk about that in the mid-90s, but it's really exploded into this deeper understanding that truly it is the root of all chronic illness. And unfortunately, where we've gone with cancer in the last 70 plus years is to say it's a genetic or a DNA damaged disease. And what we've missed is the few steps before that, right? And so we've spent all of our time going after the DNA or after the genetics. And yet, had we backed it up a few steps and gone after the mitochondria and supported the mitochondria, we never would have ended up with the damaged DNA that then leads to cancering processes and processes of other chronic illness. Yeah. And so things, you know, that's the crux of it. So, you know, genes used to be the focus. Now we're getting to mitochondria as the focus. And just like you mentioned earlier, Doc, about the impact of our diet and lifestyle on cancer, that diet and lifestyle, the impact is happening at the mitochondrial level. And so that's what's so exciting. And so when I've kind of just assessed terrains of myself and tens of thousands of patients over 25 years, I kind of came up with 10 main sort of entry points, if you will. And so because you are so good with visual analogies and your clients connect with that and your listeners do, I'll use what I use to describe the patients about the terrain 10. So I'm very visual. I love nature. So I use analogies of that. And so think of a tree growing out of the soil, okay? And the soil in which that tree is growing out of is our microbiome. The canopy of that tree is the epigenetics. The trunk connecting the soil to that canopy is the mental emotional. And then the seven sort of branches coming off of that is the metabolic process, so the way we process sugar as fuel, the toxicants that we're exposed to on a daily basis in, on, and around us, the immune function, inflammation and kind of oxidative stress patterns, angiogenesis or blood flow processes, hormone balance, stress response and circadian rhythm, and really that's it. And so it becomes this whole person, whole terrain process that, you know, a lot of people get cancer and think, oh gosh, I woke up with cancer today. And yet we know that it takes anywhere from 7 to 10 years for it to be big enough and loud enough for us to notice this. And yet we also all walk around with cancer cells in our body all the time. So that's where we help people start to assess and address their own terrain 10 and understand maybe what the priority is. And that's a good place to start.
Yeah, that's awesome. Totally shifting the mindset of the patient and doctors, for that matter, conventional doctors. But our mindset, we get this diagnosis, and all of a sudden we got to rush to chemo the next day and surgery the next day and all that stuff. Well, it's been there for 7 to 10 years, and you've got cancer in you right now, and it's your, you want your immune system and the other parts of your terrain to be optimized so that your body can handle those cancer cells that are floating around in all of us. It's just a totally different mindset. And even, I think, probably some listeners were hoping to hear this magic bullet. Okay, Dr. Winters had stage 4 ovarian cancer. Tell me what she did. Give me the herb or give me the supplement or give me whatever. It's still with the mindset of come in there and let's just blast this tumor. Let's kill this tumor. And not that there's not some value in doing that at times to a degree with certain things that we may even get into later. But that's not the, that's the wrong mindset. It's more about why did this cancer get here, and let's do some things. And just like you mentioned with the ketogenic diet, when you can get 7 or 8 or 10 different drug-like effects just from a diet, imagine if you can support your detoxification, if you can sleep well, if you can be, you can de-stress, you can do these. It sounds too basic and too simple, but it works, and you're the living proof that it works, and there's many, many, many more people out there that have shown that it works too. It's I love this, that you're getting this, putting this new mindset out there. And that's why I recommend the book to everybody, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, because you'll come away from that book understanding, wow, this isn't just about how can I kill my tumor. This is really about stewarding my health in all these different ways and being proactive in it. So, and like you said, every chronic disease, we're going to interview Dr. Thomas Cowan, who wrote a book, Human Heart, Cosmic Heart.
Yeah.
And basically his conclusion is the same thing. The mitochondria is dysfunctional. Yep. You start burning the fuel the wrong way and you get lactic acid buildup. One of these toxin buildups from bad mitochondria and leads to heart attack and stroke. So, let's do, we've got probably 12 or 15 minutes left.
Right.
Unless there's something else you want to talk about, I do want to touch on mistletoe.
Let's do it.
And let me preface this to the audience, guys. We're talking mistletoe that, yes, like you see out in your trees. Let me tell you where I first came to hear about mistletoe was earlier this year, actually. I had a gentleman from here in Lubbock. He was not a patient of mine, but he came in to become a patient primarily because he wanted us to, he wanted to inquire and see if I could inject or help him inject mistletoe subcutaneously into him a couple times a week or something. And I looked at him like he had a second head growing off his shoulder. I said, inject mistletoe? Why would I want to do that? Is that even legal? Or who are you? But he was kind enough to sit down in my office and explain to me how he was diagnosed a couple years earlier with stage 4 prostate cancer. The day he was diagnosed, it was metastatic throughout his body. His PSA was over 200. He went to the local oncologist here at Texas Tech, who gave a poor prognosis. This gentleman has the means to fly around the country and the world seeking other opinions, so he did. He went to Harvard and saw Dana-Farber. Mm-hmm. He went to Stanford. He went to Cancer Centers of America, MD Anderson, 5 places total. They all gave him roughly the same answer. So he decided to do some exploring around the world, and he flew to Germany and went to a clinic in Germany and underwent some therapies there, primarily mistletoe, although there are some other adjunctive therapies. And within 6 months, his PSA was undetectable and his PET scan was normal. All the lesions were resolved throughout his body and he was cancer-free. And he came back to America, went back to Harvard and talked to Dana-Farber and showed him his scans and his PSA. And Dana-Farber said, well, how could this be? We've never seen this. and maybe it's just one of these spontaneous remissions. But the patient was very convinced that mistletoe therapy was a big part of his turnaround. And as I started to dive in deeper, I started to learn that mistletoe's been around for over 100 years.
Yeah.
And that in Germany, 80% of the cancer patients are on mistletoe. They may be on chemotherapy and other things too, but they're on mistletoe with it. And 60%+ of European patients are on it. This isn't some crazy, wacko, hocus-pocus witchcraft. This has science behind it. There's 7,000 published studies on mistletoe.
Yeah.
So it blew my mind. And I thought, well, why doesn't Dana-Farber? Why doesn't MD Anderson? But then I went right back to, you know, my understanding that this off subject a little bit, but I had a really bad eczema patient one day, and mm-hmm. I told her the diet was something we'd have to address. And she said, no, I went to the dermatologist, and he said, this is all genetic, that diet has nothing to do with my eczema. And I explained to her that day, well, my dermatology professor at UT Houston Medical School never told me diet had anything to do with it either, but that's just because he didn't know. It was just based out of ignorance. No one ever told him or connected the dots or educated him, or he never went to a conference that showed all the published data. And it's the same thing with cancer. It's not that these oncologists are trying to, you know, keep you down, keep you sick, keep you in the pharmaceutical world necessarily. They can only give you from what they've been given. And if they don't have it in them, they haven't learned it, then they won't know. So they haven't read the 7,000 studies on mistletoe. They won't know about it. Anyways, that's a little bit of a long intro to this mistletoe therapy. But Dr. Winters, I would consider her to be kind of the expert, really one of the world's experts, but definitely here in America. So Dr. Winters, tell us your experience, your background, your experience, and kind of how mistletoe works.
Well, perfect. Well, you alluded to a lot of key points about this, of how long it's been around and how well it's been studied and how well it's utilized pretty much everywhere else in the world except for here. And I had a patient walk in, kind of like you with this gentleman, you know, said, please inject this in me. And you're kind of thinking, where's the hidden camera and the FDA and the DEA coming in to crash down your office?
Right.
I had a similar experience in, I believe it was 2002. Literally within the first couple of years of my personal private practice, and basically said, hey, I was in Germany, I brought these back, I don't know how to do shots, I want you to teach me how to do this. And I was very hesitant, but I started doing my own research, which then led me down a rabbit hole of realizing, oh gosh, this is really well used, really well tolerated, really common. Like you said, 80 to 85% of everyone living in France, Switzerland, or Germany is on it at some point during their treatment for cancer. And then the rest of Europe, the average is between 60 and 70% of all patients with cancer will be on it at some point. And so I felt a lot better about it. I actually was able to call and consult with the doctor she saw in Germany just to understand how to use it. They had a lot of literature support for the doctors out of Europe to teach us how to use it. So I just frankly dove in. I mean, she was going to do it with or without me. So I wanted to make sure she was safe, right? That's my job.
Right.
And it made a difference for someone with an inflammatory breast cancer that was non-responsive to other therapies that had metastasized to her liver and her lung and a lesion on her bone. That person lived another 11 years with stage 4 metastatic breast disease with no symptoms. And the thing that actually finally did take her life was a treatment with Zolota that shut down her liver function. And I've had other situations with that as well, which was really unfortunate. And, you know, those were the places where I started to understand even more so of how important it was to focus on the terrain and not the tumor, because we will damage the whole organism if we keep going after every last tumor and tumor cell. That's when you can really tilt the teeter-totter in the favor of completely, you know, disarming the whole body and being. And I've seen that be what is the often cause of death for my patients dealing with cancer versus the cancer itself. That's actually more rare than the side effects of treatment. And so that's why I don't think people should do conventional medicine without, you know, an integrative supportive part, because we sure can make our conventional therapies work better. So that was kind of my first experience. And since then, to date, I have personally overseen around 400,000 to 500,000 injections and up to probably around 6,000 IVs. I've also in the past year taught over 250 doctors across the country how to safely and appropriately assess and address the terrain of the client to decide what is the best mistletoe for that patient and the dosing structure for that patient. This is not a protocol. It's got to be based on the individual. So just simply going to somebody's office and saying, give me mistletoe, is going to be no different than, you know, going and getting chemo. It may work in some, but it may fail in most. And so learning how to understand and have a relationship with this medicine is just as important as the medicine itself. So just an example of a few of the things that mistletoe does is it has these lectins in it that create a direct cytotoxic, you know, it kills the cancer cells. And it can also uncloak the cancer cells, because the cancer cells over time start to hide from the immune system. So we can basically...
Oh. I think we might have lost her on that.
Oh, no.
There you are.
Okay, good. Yo, you scared me. That's so kooky. Okay, so I'll repeat that piece.
Okay.
The cloaking.
Dr. Winters
was
there.
Cloaking.
You were cloaking in that last little thing.
I got cloaked. There you go. Well, I need a dose of mistletoe then to uncloak me.
Okay.
So that, it kind of helps expose the cell to other therapies. So it works beautifully. Mistletoe likes to play well with others, just like the ketogenic diet. It's also anti-angiogenic by directly lowering VEGF, which is a thing that grows new blood vessels to tumors. It stabilizes and repairs broken DNA and mitochondria. So that comes back to that mitochondrial influence. It's anti-inflammatory. It strongly immunomodulates. It's sort of our original immunomodulator, and yet we're spending billions of dollars on these therapies that have a lot of side effects and harm, and yet we've got some age-old therapies that work beautifully. And it can be injected subcutaneously, intravenously. In parts of the world, they're doing it intratumorally or into the ascites fluid or the fluid in the lungs. We have research on that happening all over the world. There's finally a clinical trial in this country at Hopkins testing on patients who failed, you know, the therapies have failed them over the years. And so that's just started in February. And we've got people, like for instance, in Brazil, they're using this therapy as a standalone treatment for hepatitis C. In places in Russia, they're using it directly into the thyroid gland to treat thyroid cancer and the Hashimoto's and other autoimmune issues, thanks to Chernobyl. I mean, there's so many examples of where this therapy is being really utilized and studied in a profound way. So our hope is that more people in this country will know that it exists and can help make their conventional treatments work better, that it can also really potentiate their overall quality of life, their mitochondrial function, and their immune system to be able to help other therapies, conventional or not, work better.
Can I ask a quick question?
Please.
What about, okay, say you don't have cancer, but you want to prevent it. What about, like, mistletoe essential oil?
Well, now, interesting, you can take mistletoe orally. In fact, that's what all the boxes say. They say that they're a sip. But the lectins get broken down in the digestive juices, and that takes away the anti-cancer effect. Now, you can get other positive effects. It can help with headaches. It's known as a headache therapy. It can help with other things. The essential oils would be the same. The lectins would be degraded in the buffer, you know, in the oil base. And so to avoid that, that's why it has to be injected,
okay,
so that you don't break it down. And so that's one of the challenges with this, is a lot of people are a bit needle phobic or don't have access to people able to do IVs, et cetera. And so that is the key, though, that, you know, I hear a lot of people saying, oh, I've taken the tincture and whatnot. Well, it isn't going to have an anti-cancer effect at all in that realm. And so, but that you started to say something that I thought you were going to ask. There's actually studies of using it as a prophylactic or like a vaccine in folks that may have, say, BRCA gene or Lynch or ATM gene issues, so they could start taking this preventatively, or people who know they've had some mitochondrial damage, say from Cipro or a lot of radiation or other, you know, Epstein-Barr or other things that really made them sick. And so you can actually kind of clean up the terrain with this and even do some preventive, and there's some cool studies happening on that very topic.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Winters, we've got about 5 minutes left. Can you kind of speak to where you see the future of not just mistletoe, but just cancer therapy in general? Do you see any conventional oncologists getting on board? Is an integrative approach picking up speed with kind of the new thought process on the mitochondria being the issue, the microbiome's effect, all the stuff that you discuss in your book? Please give me some hope. I mean, you mentioned John Hopkins doing a study with mistletoe, so that's great. I hope it goes somewhere. But kind of where do you see the next 5 to 10 years of cancer therapy?
Well, I love that question, because in the first 23 years of my own journey, my own practice, I didn't see it going anywhere. In fact, I saw the opposite, and it was quite disheartening. It's part of why I left brick-and-mortar practice and went into consulting, so I could spend my entire time researching and trying to teach and educate others. And then a beautiful shift happened in the last 2 or 3 years. I've seen more integration, interaction, research being directed in these areas that make so much more sense. A discussion around the concept of terrain versus tumor. Even Dr. Seyfried's book in 2011 seemed to become a primer, you know, like a textbook for doctors to start to rethink what they were spoon-fed, because the conventional textbooks still haven't caught up with what we're talking about right now. You know, we're 6-7 years into the publication of Dr. Seyfried's book, and 6-7 years into some really focused research with him up in Boston, Dr. D'Agostino down in Florida, Dr. Adrian Scheck in Arizona, Dr. Longo in Southern California. We have kind of planted people all over this country that are really looking at the metabolic rate, the metabolism, the mitochondrial function, and the terrain, and how we can change this. So the research is catching up with what a lot of us have felt or known, and I think there is hope. I have a feeling in the next 5 or 10 years, we're actually going to start seeing maybe the chemos or the targeted therapies won't go away, but we're going to see them included with things like ketogenic diet, mistletoe, hyperbaric oxygen, high-dose IV vitamin C. We're going to start to see these players coming together.
Yeah, that's encouraging. For the patient, that's really encouraging, because like we said at the top of the show, we haven't really budged the survival rates on tumors in the past 50 years. We've got 2.1% of people benefiting from chemotherapy over a 5-year period. So we need to do something different, and your book lays it out so beautifully. So I'm encouraged. I'm more encouraged even today after our discussion. So thank you for all you've done, for leading the charge in so many ways, and it's hard to do that in America sometimes when you get outside that conventional wisdom, especially in medicine, something so staunched in tradition and singular thinking and tunnel vision kind of thing. So thank you for all you've done. It's an amazing story. Stage 4 ovarian cancer, 25 years later, alive and well, by not focusing on the tumor, but focusing on the terrain. So listeners, I think I hope you understand that what you've heard today is way ahead of its time. If you can implement the things that Dr. Winters lays out in her book, not only for cancer, but for all chronic disease, we don't need to be the sickest country in the world. You know, I always talk about the Pima Indians in Southeast Arizona, I believe they are. Before World War II, they had 0 diabetics, and now 50% of their tribe is diabetes, and your genes don't change that quick. It was all about, they started eating the American diet and lifestyle. So all these things are preventable, reversible, but it boils down to that terrain and the diet and lifestyle that influences the terrain. So regardless of if you have cancer or another chronic disease or just want to be preventative in general, I highly recommend the book, The Metabolic Approach to Cancer. And again, Dr. Winters' website, optimalterrainconsulting.com. So if you or a loved one has cancer, consider a consultation with Dr. Winters. She can kind of give you a game plan on how to work with your oncologist. So, and I love also in your book, I didn't mention questions to ask your oncologist. We didn't have time to get into that, but anyone that has cancer, newly diagnosed, definitely pick up a copy of the book just to get those questions that you would need to ask your oncologist. So, packed full of good information. So thank you, Dr. Winters. We really appreciate you being with us today, and we'll have you back someday, hopefully.
I hope so. Thank you very much, and I wish everyone the best.
All right. Thank you very much. Wade, back to you.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Doctor. We appreciate that. Dr. Winters, everybody. And Dr. Edwards, we appreciate you. We'll see you back here next week on You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Again, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out VeritasMedical.com for this broadcast and other broadcasts. You can find it there at VeritasMedical.com. Stick around now. Unconfused coming up next right here on AM 580.